Today we learn once again how the love of money is the root of all evil.
Very few countries in the world lost more people to coronavirus than New York did, and no states lost more in the United States. How exactly did that happen? It's a question that needs a serious answer. Many people died. Finding out seems of no interest whatsoever to the press. They'd rather shame people for visiting the beach. Erin Marie Olszewski is a nurse. She spent almost a month working in New York's Elmhurst Hospital. That was the epicenter of the coronavirus outbreak in the state. She was so shocked by what she saw that she began to collect undercover footage of what was happening around her.
Welcome to Understanding the Times Radio with Jan Markell, Radio for the Remnant, brought to you by Olive Tree Ministries. Today, Jan visits for a second time with Scott Shara, Grace's dad. Grace Shara died at the hands of a Wisconsin hospital in 2021. Could the circumstances surrounding this visit you or someone you love? What can you do to protect yourself? Jan and Scott Shara talk about it this hour. Here is today's programming.
So glad you can join me for Understanding the Times Radio today. And I am pleased to have back on air with me Scott Shara. Scott has been on Understanding the Times Radio previously, relating the story of his daughter Grace and her death at the hands of what he feels is a reckless Wisconsin hospital, Appleton, Wisconsin, October 2021. I've aired that story in the last year on this program, but we have an update today. And I want to advise you how you can prevent a similar circumstance from happening to you and those you love. Some of you may be thinking, well, Jan, this concerns COVID and this is kind of old news. Yet we are being warned that another pandemic is coming, and I think that's a guarantee. And I don't think that any healthcare-related story is outdated because these become control issues more than healthcare issues. Just going to play a clip here of Dr. Peter McCullough talking about what could possibly be the next pandemic.
If there's another pandemic, and Anthony Fauci says this, Peter Hotez, Tedros at the WHO, they're all saying this, let's take them seriously. Let's be ready. Every household needs to be ready with viricidal nasal washes and sprays, good background nutraceuticals and supplements, including vitamin D supplementation. And then look for doctors like me to innovate and find a way to treat the next threat. Don't wait and depend on a vaccine. That's been a disastrous approach for the public.
Dr. McCullough, very respected cardiologist, actually I've heard him in person, one who spoke into, continues to speak into the pandemic, both COVID and whatever could be forthcoming. So hospitals should be places you can trust to provide comfort and healing when you're most vulnerable. But that trust may have been shattered by brutal COVID protocols that critics claim turned many hospitals into heartless institutions that were actually hazardous to one's health. Scott Shara says that the dilemma started long before COVID. In fact, Obamacare in 2010 opened the door for this present health nightmare. And the full extent of that nightmare was revealed in the last 3.5 years since the COVID ordeal began, and it actually goes back to the mid-1990s. We'll talk about that a little bit more. The love of money driving a lot of this. Scott Shara believes that his daughter Grace was literally murdered by a large hospital system headquartered, at least some of their branches, in Appleton, Wisconsin, October 2021. And now Scott is a full-time advocate to expose this and what happened to his daughter, Grace. We're also going to play some clips from a brand new movie that Scott has had a major role in producing called Breaking the Oath, The Evils of Incentivized Healthcare. So you're going to hear 4 or 5 clips from that very gripping film. Scott, welcome back to the studio.
Jan, thanks for having me.
Because we have new listeners, I want you to summarize what happened back in October 2021. Your daughter, Grace, Down syndrome, high functioning, played the violin. I've said it on air before. An amazing 19-year-old. Why don't you summarize what happened?
We found out that Grace had COVID, or we believe she had COVID, on October 1st because we did a home test. We had all of the tools that we needed to take care of her, including ivermectin and vitamins, so she was immediately on that protocol. One of the things that we did, and I'd like to talk about this because we bought a pulse ox, which is a tool to measure your oxygen saturation. because we were following the FLCCC protocol at the time, and they suggested getting a pulse ox, and they further suggested that if oxygen saturation drops below 94%, admit yourself to the hospital. We followed that protocol, and I'm not throwing them under the bus whatsoever. But the reason I explain that situation specifically is because my personal critical thinking went out the door and it followed a protocol instead. I say that with confidence that if we would not have taken Grace to the hospital with low oxygen, she would have not died. She'd be alive today. Because I went to a different hospital 3 days after Grace died, and they turned me around in 24 hours. The reason I say the critical thinking was not there is because Grace has been sick multiple times in her life. And I know now, based on understanding a pulse ox, understanding oxygen saturation, that when you get a cold or flu, your oxygen saturation drops. In the case of Grace, it dropped to 88%. We took her to the urgent care emergency room, ultimately checked her into the hospital. Her first day in the hospital was October 7th. She died October 13th of 2021. How she died was the hospital, through the doctors, put her on a sedation med called Presidex starting October 9th. On her last day, she was already on it 4 full days. The package insert says to not use it for more than 24 hours because it causes acute respiratory failure. That is the first cause of death listed on Grace's death certificate, so that's the truth. The second cause of death listed is COVID-19 pneumonia. That's a flat-out lie. What they did was they combined Presidex with lorazepam and morphine, three drugs that should never be used in combination. They did that in a 29-minute window, which would have taken any of us out. That is truly the second cause of death in Grace's situation, is the med combination. And the third cause, if you want to look at the most egregious offense, is the doctor put an illegal do not resuscitate order on Grace the morning of her last day.
You were told she was getting better.
In the phone call we had with the doctor that morning, the purpose of the call was to ask us for the fifth time for a pre-authorization for a ventilator. When we said no, he immediately switched gears and said, Grace had such a good day, let's work on nutrition. So we, in that conversation, approved a feeding tube. He said he expected her to be out of the hospital in the next several days, so we have to work on nutrition. By the end of that day, she was dead.
So there seems to be a license to kill going on, and you feel it goes back to Obamacare. Back in March of 2010, we can look at some of the comments of Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel. He's the prime architect of Obamacare. He wrote as far back as 1996 that health care services provided to individuals who are irreversibly prevented from being or becoming participating citizens are not basic and should not be guaranteed. That seems to be a license to kill, which is going on big time in Canada. They have what's called medical assistance in dying, MAID. It's the number one cause of death in Canada. In other words, unknown death is the number one cause of death in Canada. Talk to me about Obamacare.
We're the best country in the world at projecting our sin onto other countries. So these naughty Canadians who have the MAID program, I'm going to connect the dots that we had medical assistance in dying way before the Canadians. In fact, it was codified into law on March 23rd of 2010. And that's Obamacare. If you Google Obamacare, you'll see it's 906 pages long. Page 141 has section 1553. And section 1553 is the literal license to kill, Jan. It says that the government may not subject an individual, that would be a doctor, or an institutional healthcare entity, that would be a hospital, hospice care facility, nursing home facility, to discrimination on the basis that that entity does not provide any healthcare item or service furnished for the purpose of causing or for the purpose of assistance in causing the death of any individual, such as by assisted suicide, euthanasia, or mercy killing. So in short, if a doctor stands on moral ground and will not take advantage of the person by taking them out with assisted suicide, euthanasia, or mercy killing, he or she cannot be discriminated against. Why would we have a law like that other than to put in the literal license to kill that you just said?
Listening to your story, which I have here for a couple of years, you've been on with me a couple times, and we're trying to update today. I'm reminded that several nurses told your wife, Cindy, they did not believe Grace should die. And by the way, we want to insert here that we are not indicting everyone in the medical community because many still operate with that oath to save lives, but we're going to introduce the film. in just a moment, which is called breaking the oath, because too many are doing exactly that. But they told Cindy they didn't believe Grace should die. That had to be a big clue to you.
That was our first clue. The specific nurse who did that, she walked out with Cindy that evening of Grace's death and said, Mrs. Shara, me and several of the nurses don't think Grace should have died today. Yes, she gave us the first clue that we had that something nefarious happened that day.
And I know you have a lawsuit against this hospital chain, but they are worth, and I'm going to talk about them in a few minutes, $30 billion in cash. That's the Goliath you're going after.
Truly, this is a David versus Goliath story. We not just filed against the hospital, but we also filed against five doctors and two nurses who were directly involved with Grace's care. And the reason we took that path is because individual doctors and nurses still have choices. They cannot blame the system. They cannot blame protocols. They cannot blame the NIH. None of that can be blamed. They still have to take ownership of the choices. And the choices that they made in the situation with Grace ultimately ended her life. We filed that way so that as Grace's story and lawsuit get national attention, doctors and nurses can be put on notice that they will all be held to account for the choices that they have made.
Some are coming forth, and I want to introduce a couple of clips from your film, Breaking the Oath, The Evils of Incentivized Healthcare. And in this particular clip, it opens here with Tucker Carlson, but Tucker is talking to a fascinating gal. She is a nurse who has come forth, Erin Olszewski. And you told me, Scott, that she's paid a price. She can't even get a nursing job. Is that right?
That's correct.
Why don't we play this clip? It's Tucker, and this would have been some time ago. He obviously left Fox in April. He's talking to Erin, and I'm going to play some more clips of her because she is someone who's come forth and said enough's enough. She saw way too much.
Very few countries in the world lost more people to coronavirus than New York did, and no states lost more in the United States. How exactly did that happen? It's a question that needs a serious answer. Many people died. Finding out seems of no interest whatsoever to the press. They'd rather shame people for visiting the beach. Erin Marie Olszewski is a nurse. She spent almost a month working in New York's Elmhurst Hospital. That was the epicenter of the coronavirus outbreak in the state. She was so shocked by what she saw that she began to collect undercover footage of what was happening around her.
This patient is in with like a non-COVID. I don't understand why they're doing that.
I know. There's four patients in a row here non-COVID. And this is supposed to be the COVID. Seventh floor, they shut it down.
That's right. I'm confused.
And then they're going to have non-COVID there.
Yeah.
This is going to be the only COVID, so they shouldn't put any non-COVIDs here.
Well, that's what they've been doing. The guy over in 29, I had him upstairs because I was on CCU before it.
Yeah.
And he came in with a stroke.
I know, that's what 26-1 was, a stroke.
And no COVID. And now he's got COVID, and he's on a vent.
Well, because we gave it to him here.
Erin Olszewski is the author of the forthcoming book, The Undercover Epicenter Nurse. She joins us tonight. Erin, thanks so much for coming on. Thank you for doing this. The insides of hospitals.
Well, thank you for having me.
So tell us what we just saw. Explain the video we played, if you would.
Well, this was a pretty common occurrence, and the video shows COVID and non-COVID being housed in the same floor, sometimes in the same rooms, which is ultimately creating hospital-acquired infections of COVID. It's nosocomial infections. So people will be admitted without COVID, and they will end up getting COVID. Sometimes they'll be awaiting their tests, which would take anywhere from 5 to 10 days to see if they had COVID and be admitted to these floors while they waited.
That is shocking, and I'm just so glad that you got video of it. I mean, this was happening at the same time the rest of us weren't allowed to go outside for fears that we would spread the coronavirus to one another. How could this happen in a hospital where people have weakened immune systems?
I'd like those answers. I've been asking them, and nobody seems to really have those answers. I don't know who the authority is. That's what I'm always referred to. Part of this, I think, came from Governor Cuomo's executive order that he did on March 23rd, 2020, removing essentially all liability from all medical professionals, banning the hydroxychloroquine, not allowing family into these hospitals in order to advocate for their patients. So there's a lot of different things that happened that really created this problem.
It's so interesting that you mentioned not allowing family in to advocate for their relatives. That was a factor in this, it sounds like.
It's a huge factor, and that's what I'm having a really hard time with, because nurses, we're supposed to be reporting anything that we see unethical. It's part of our job. And
yes.
Without family in the rooms, we are the patient's eyes, ears, and everything. We have to make sure that the patients are being treated properly. Anybody and any nurse or anyone that would question anything would be sent home. I was one of them. Nobody ever wanted any of this out, and it's all hearsay if you don't have proof. So I needed to get the proof because it is so absolutely unbelievable. Without it, people couldn't even fathom this.
I think this is a scandal. I don't use that word lightly. You were sent home for complaining about a policy of putting COVID patients with people who weren't infected. That's shocking.
Correct. For asking questions, they would tell us that be good, behave, don't ask any of these questions, or you're going to be sent home. And I have a recording of that as well. I was there for just under a month. So a lot of this is all well documented.
Yeah, it certainly is. And if it wasn't, no one would believe you.
You are listening to Understanding the Times Radio. I'm Jan Markell. I have in the studio Scott Shera. Scott lost his daughter, Grace, in October 2021. He's given the story on this program a couple times. And because of new listeners, I wanted him to summarize it again. Now he's got an outstanding film. I have seen it. Breaking the Oath, The Evils of Incentivized Healthcare. That was a clip from it. You can watch it free on Rumble. Go to rumble.com and you can type in Breaking the Oath. It's outstanding. It's less than 2 hours. I highly recommend you do that. Scott, talk to me about what we just heard.
What Erin was doing is early on, she saw what was going on in hospitals and she couldn't believe it. She was being paid $10,000 a week as a traveling nurse. She had to sign a gag order as part of that contract to not expose what she was seeing. She chose to go against that, walk away. And if all of us would have paid attention to what she was saying at the beginning, including me, Grace would be alive, mm-hmm. and so would another 1.2 million Americans who have lost their lives in the last 39 months in hospital deaths under the guise of COVID.
You can learn a lot more, folks, at Scott's website, ouramazinggrace.net, ouramazinggrace.net. You can also access the link to the film, Breaking the Oath. And you have a radio program yourself, you have a podcast, and you've had numerous spokespeople on who are representing this drama that we're talking about. And then at the end of the film, you've got more testimonies. I think this story has not gotten out like it should. And we featured Marge Holston on here. This would have been a year and a half ago. She lost her mother. I think people cannot accept that the people we have trusted, and again, we love some of you in the medical profession who are maintaining the oath, but I think people find it hard to believe this is happening.
That's true. That seems to be the largest battle that I face on a daily basis, is how you don't feel like you are making a difference. It is very hard for people to wrap their heads around. I like to quote things and use statistics to help in that matter. So when I mention, for example, 1.2 million Americans have lost mm-hmm. their lives, that number may seem small or large depending on what your perspective is. But if you frame that number in terms of the world, it really helps to see how nefarious this agenda is. In terms of the world, we're number one of all 200 countries on the planet in hospital deaths with COVID as a diagnosis. Number two is India, whose population is four times that of the United States, and their death count is less than half, 531,000.
How much money do you feel this hospital made because of Grace's death?
I can't answer because of Grace's death, because we only have the bill that was sent to Medicaid. I don't know all the bonuses they received relative to COVID. I know they received a $13,000 death bonus, but I don't have a printout of that, so I can't tell you for sure relative to Grace's death.
But hospitals could get up to $300,000 for a death.
Oh, substantially more than that. It depends on all the things that they loaded up.
Ventilator and everything.
The ventilator, if they did ventilator with remdesivir, the numbers that I've heard relative to that combination is in the half a million average.
This is incentivized healthcare. It truly is. And yet this healthcare system, I'm going to read something here in just a minute or two, how much money they're actually taking in. They're certainly not hurting. Let me read it now. It's an expose by the New York Times against the hospital system that you're referring to. New York Times, which brought the healthcare system's malfeasance to a wide mainstream audience, notes that the big money medical system, quote, spent years reducing its staffing levels in an effort to improve profitability, even though the chain is a nonprofit. Happens to be Catholic, by the way. It goes on to say here that it, quote, cut staff to skeletal levels, often at the expense of patient safety. Goes on that in numerous cases, its patients lingered for hours on gurneys with serious time-sensitive problems, that it suffers from a lack of transparency, even as profits have soared sixfold in its first decade to a revenue position rivaling that of corporations like General Mills, etc., and that it avoids more than $1 billion a year in federal, state, and local taxes, even as it runs an investment company that manages more than $41 billion. This is the hospital system that you are dealing with that contributed towards the death of your daughter, Grace.
That's correct. It's truly David versus Goliath, yes, as you know, by reading those numbers. And I did my own math relative to what they pulled in terms of government COVID bonuses. In the first year of COVID, they received $10 billion.
$10 billion. That is incentive. The hospital system here went on to suggest that she was responsible for her own death and that you were responsible for her death. Talk to us about that. And by the way, there was even an armed guard posted outside of Grace's hospital room. And why?
I'll answer the armed guard situation first. We have really no idea. Once we have the armed guard giving a deposition, I think we're going to find out an awful lot of information that we don't know now. We found out, obviously, there was an armed guard because Jessica, my daughter, was in the room with Grace. And our personal opinion was he prevented any nurse with a conscience from coming in to save Grace. Jessica called us. You might remember this, Jan. She called us at 7:20 panicking. This was on a FaceTime call, and we started screaming to the nurses, save our daughter. And they hollered back, she's DNR, do not resuscitate. And we hollered back, she's not DNR, save our daughter. Nobody would come in the room. After they gave Grace morphine, they refused to come in the room. That was from 6:15 till Grace died at 7:27. So we watched Grace die in a FaceTime call because, in our belief, the armed guard prevented any nurse with a conscience from coming in. Relative to the lawsuit, what you read is correct. It's some strange thing. So just so people understand the time frame, we filed our summons and complaint on April 11th. The hospital, the five doctors and two nurses had to respond on May 15th. They all did respond on May 15th. And there's some shocking things. What you read was affirmative defense number 6, and I'm going to quote it. It says, any and all injuries or damages sustained by plaintiffs may be a direct and proximate result of the negligence and or decisions made by the plaintiffs. So yes, they're putting the blame on us, which of course, from the perspective of, yes, I did take her to the hospital. But what I think they're alluding to is that Grace was not vaccinated and we didn't allow a pre-authorization for a ventilator. Grace was never a ventilator candidate, nor should a ventilator be used with COVID. I just want to share one other thing from their answer. I'm going to quote again. It says, in answer to paragraph 6 of the complaint, deny that, I won't say the name of the hospital system, directly provides healthcare services. So they're denying that they provide healthcare services. This stuff is designed to have us spend money so that we run out of gas. And they picked the wrong girl, as you know.
Absolutely.
Our family is, we're all in, and Grace is worth being all in on.
Absolutely. We're going to play one more clip here of Nurse Erin Olszewski. Again, this is from the film, Breaking the Oath, The Evils of Incentivized Healthcare.
Everything that has happened since the very, very beginning has all been based on fear tactics, because they can create whatever type of public health emergency and put the fear into the people so the people will comply, because nobody wants to be sick and nobody wants to die, but that's how they did it. That's how they were able to get to where we are, I guess, today. They kicked out all the family members. First of all, that should have never happened. It should never, ever, ever happen again. That was very confusing to me, because as a nurse, if I can gown up and put on the mask, put on all the PPE, and then leave the hospital, we were allowed to go to Walgreens and Target and CVS that were all open around Times Square, while everybody else and their family members is banned and sent home. Sometimes they put restraining orders on family members because they wanted to come in. That's a huge issue. That was a big red flag, because without a family member to advocate for you, what do you have? You have a nurse, right? I mean, a nurse's job is to be the patient's advocate. But if you have nurses that are unwilling to advocate for their patient because they're more concerned about their paychecks, then this is where things went very, very south and not in the patient's favor.
You can learn more and you can find the link to the film at ouramazinggrace.net or streaming on rumble.com. Let me just add something here encouraging, because there is encouraging medical news. I recently sent an email from Twyla Brace, co-founder of Citizens Council for Health Freedom. She says this, she said, I have been attending the Direct Primary Care Conference in Minneapolis all weekend. She says, we talked to 100 physicians, and it's heartening to hear them talk about how badly they want to be real doctors again and how wonderful it has been for those who have started a direct primary care practice. It's essential for patients all over the country to locate them and help their independent practices to thrive and not just survive. And then Twyla says, we invited all of them to add their practice to the wedge of health freedom so that patients can find them. It was great having conversations with these independent-minded individuals who had broken away from the corporate system. And then Twyla concludes, this, of course, is all part of us building the new framework for health freedom, a parallel system of cash-based, affordable, patient-centered, ethical care. Then she says folks can go to jointhewedge.com, jointhewedge.com, and you can look for a listing of some of these doctors, and they're adding to jointhewedge.com on a regular basis. So again, that was a word from Twyla Brace. As I was preparing for Scott Shera, Twyla sent me that information. I'm coming back in just a moment or two, and I'm going to continue on with Scott Shera. I want to play a couple more clips from the film Breaking the Oath, The Evils of Incentivized Healthcare, and I want to bring into the picture Vera Shera. Vera was on air with Scott and me. This is many months ago when we recorded a program here on Understanding the Times Radio. Vera contributes to this marvelous film that has been produced that is exposing some of this going on around the country. So I'll bring Vera into the discussion in just a moment or two. Don't go away. I'm coming right back.
We hope you'll stay in touch with us online through olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org. You can call us Central Time at 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444. Write us through the mail at Olive Tree Ministries and Jan Markell, Post Office Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota 55311. That's Post Office Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota 55311. All gifts are tax deductible. In the age of fake news and false teaching, thank you for trusting Olive Tree Ministries and Understanding the Times Radio. We are pleased to carry Jeff Kinley's newest book, God's Grand Finale, Wrath, Grace, and Glory in Earth's Last Days. The Bible's last book is God's final word to mankind and the breathtaking revelation of our Lord Jesus Christ. The revelation describes depravity, devils, and destruction. It also provides an incredible portrait of our Almighty God, delivering profound insights into who He really is. This book will help you experience how God uses the apocalyptic realities of Revelation to reveal Himself to you. When the dust of Revelation settles, we behold the Lamb standing and ruling in triumphant, sovereign, and indescribable glory. Find this uplifting new book by Jeff Kinley, God's Grand Finale, Wrath, Grace, and Glory in Earth's Last Days, in our online store at olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org. You can also call us Central Time at 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444. You can order by mail for just $12. We charge no shipping in the U.S. or Canada.
Hey I don't think people realize what's really happening. We are truly in the boiling frog pot right now. Grace's death woke me up, and now I've jumped out. I can see it. I am doing this, and our family is doing this, because we don't want anybody else to have to go through that.
We know you can't always be by a radio, so if you miss a program, visit our website, olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org, and then go to radio, where we feature both the audio and video versions of our program. You can also catch the program at oneplace.com, on our Rumble or YouTube channel, and on his channel, Christian TV. Now here are Jen Markell and Scott Shara to conclude today's programming.
By the time I got to Elmhurst Hospital, I was there a couple days, and I learned that 100% of the patients, by the time I got there, had died. After realizing what was really going on, it wasn't hard to know that it was the actual protocols of the hospital that were killing all of these patients. And what's even worse is the fact that every single nurse that I was working with and assigned with, and these are travel nurses from all over the United States, we all agreed with this. We all talked about it. We knew it was wrong. But the problem is they were sending people home and firing them for even saying a word about it. We were made to sign essential gag orders when we signed on to the hospital. They made it very clear that we need to follow the protocols and essentially just don't cause any problems. A good piece of this puzzle, and another good reason why so many nurses didn't say anything, is because of the paycheck, right? So you get fired, you lose that paycheck. Money is the root of all evil, in my opinion. I could care less about a paycheck when I'm watching somebody's family member essentially get slaughtered by these protocols and doctors and nurses that are too afraid to speak up. And when I realized that I'm probably going to be the lone wolf here, because there's no way I could ever continue on with this assignment and do nothing and be able to sleep for the rest of my life. They weren't coding patients. When I say that, I mean, if you want to be given CPR to save your life, that is considered a full code. If you don't, you're considered a DNR, and that takes an order either from two doctors, if they can't reach the family, or the family member or the patient themselves. That was being completely disregarded. So doctors were actually ordering us to stand down and not save the patients, but yet documenting that we did do CPR, which was a lie. So all of even like the paperwork and that was very minimal. And they used the pandemic as an excuse. So there's a lot of cover up. Every single one of those patients was being put into the freezer trucks. No, they were not dying from COVID. They were dying from the protocols and the lack of compassion and care.
That was Erin Olszewski. She is a registered nurse. And the clip is from, again, the new film I have seen, Breaking the Oath, The Evils of Incentivized Healthcare. In studio with me is Scott Shara, one of the producers of the film. Scott, if you've joined me late, lost his daughter Grace, Down syndrome, lovely gal, high-functioning, played the violin, just an amazing person. In October of 2021, because of hospital abuse, and we've been talking about that here for the first part of the program, I'm going to bring in the Vera Sharav angle in just a moment or two, but Scott, even after the pandemic was declared over by Mr. Biden, this protocol went on and goes on today. Can you help us understand that?
I wish I could help you understand that, Jan. What I can say is that this evil has been going on for a lot longer than what people understand.
Yeah.
The pandemic exposed it. I became awake to it as part of that. So they want this PrEP Act immunity, the not having family members in the room, the shroud of secrecy. Mm. Now you see state legislatures trying to pass laws to let family members in the room. Why do we need to pass laws for something that's so obvious? And still, the incentives are going to continue. It's obvious people are starting to be afraid to go to the hospital, yes, which I understand. So now the government is going to have to keep incentivizing healthcare in order to now make it profitable. So we know this is going to continue. I don't know what shape it's going to continue in, but it's going to continue.
You have a hearing July 14th. Talk to me about what that's going to be about.
As I mentioned, all of the doctors, nurses who we listed as defendants, along with the healthcare system, responded on May 15th. One of the doctors wrote a brief through his attorney that said there's certain legal standings that don't apply where we don't have the option to hold them to account by state statute. Of course, we disagree with that. So they wrote a legal brief. Our legal team now has to also write a brief, and there's a hearing on July 14th to entertain that motion that the one doctor's attorney brought. If we survive that motion, which I fully expect to, I've talked with the legal team, they're working on our brief right now, then the next step is going to be a scheduling conference, and then the lawsuit will go through discovery, depositions, and ultimately we'll get our day in court somewhere 18 to 24 months down the road.
You have told me that even if you were to win $50 million from this hospital conglomerate, you're not going to take the money. Why is that?
Because this case is not about money.
Yep.
If the judge happens to award us money, the opportunity to help other people file similar cases. There's been, as I said earlier, 1.2 million American families who don't have their loved ones anymore because of this. And they're all hurting. Each one of them should have the same opportunity. We've just been blessed, so we have an opportunity, and that opportunity we're not going to have go to waste. And if for some reason we're awarded any sum of money, we want to plow it back into other opportunities for other families.
And one of your purposes, and another reason why you're even here today, is you're trying to shine light on this terrible evil. You told me you've been on as many as 600 radio programs, which is astounding. That's huge. You were on Glenn Beck recently as well, and I know he was able to raised some funds for you. I think in 24 hours, he raised quite a bit through GoFundMe.
Yes.
600 programs, that's reaching in the millions of people. What kind of feedback are you getting?
The feedback is fantastic from the programs that I'm on. I've met some of these hosts personally, including you. You develop new friendships. Mm-hmm. The feedback that we receive because we're talking to people who are waking up. So they're enjoying what we are doing, and they're starting to see us as a resource, which is fantastic. What is most surprising is the people that you would expect to be your friends are the ones that know you. And that community, for the most part, has rejected us.
Why is that?
I can't answer that. I'd have to talk with them individually. The way I see it is that the truth is the most valuable commodity on earth. And now that we're speaking truth, think through what has to happen. If somebody believes what we're saying, their whole life changes.
True.
I can't get into the psyche because that is not my field, but it just seems strange that that has been the reaction that we've received from the most part. Very few people who we thought were friends are true friends.
The part of your story that impressed me, lots of it did, but this stands out to me, is I think it was suggested to you that Grace was in fact murdered by this hospital system, but you spent 500 hours of research. You wanted real evidence that that was the case. Am I right?
That's correct. Early on, people were calling Grace's death murder, and I thought, boy, I don't know that that's true. I couldn't wrap my head around it.
Yeah.
At first, when you start paying attention to the records, you see, okay, I can see this med combination killed Grace. As naive as I was at the time, what we did was I followed the biblical responsibility that we all have, which is confront the person who sinned against you. So we wrote an email through the patient relations department to the hospital CEO and the doctor requesting a meeting. When they refused to meet, that's when we thought, this is very strange. Wouldn't they want to know what happened so that history doesn't repeat itself? But they refused to meet. And that's when we started digging in and ultimately decided to jump in with both feet in December of 2021.
I want to bring Vera into the picture for just a moment by way of a soundbite, and I'm back to the film. Folks, you can find this on Rumble. You can also find a link at ouramazinggrace.net. Vera is a Holocaust survivor, and Scott, she's kind of teamed up with you, which I think is an amazing friendship that you've formed here and working associate as well. I think Vera's been a blessing to you.
Oh my gosh, I can't speak highly enough of her. She's been a real gift to our family. There's days where you, this is tough.
Yeah.
And if I call Vera, she's very uplifting. She's been in this fight. I've only been in it for 2 years. Mm-hmm. She's been in this fight for 30 years.
Yeah.
So you look at somebody like her and you see, oh my gosh, at 86 years old, She's sharp. She's a go-getter, yep. And she just has the right attitude, and I enjoy her as a friend.
She quite often compares all of this that's happening to what happened during the Holocaust. There's some tremendous similarities. Let's play this clip. This is Vera, and she's going to make an analogy to what happened to the Jews during the Holocaust.
And when in 2020, March and April 2020, all the European countries, some five states in the United States, Canada, Australia, the governments ordered hospitals not to treat the elderly, send them to nursing homes where it was mass genocide. In New York, before Governor Cuomo issued the order, just so people understand, this was not that they didn't know that what they were ordering hospitals to do and nursing homes, they did. They knew exactly what they were doing. Governor Cuomo, before he issued the order, predicted that this virus in nursing homes will be like fire through dry grass. Fire through dry grass. He gave immunity to both hospitals and nursing homes, and then he issued the order. He's got the blood of 15,000 New Yorkers in his hands. Nobody has been punished for the mass murder that's been going on. First, well, in the hospitals also. Now, with Grace, she was medically murdered, most likely because she had Down syndrome. Because she was, otherwise, she was healthy. But they decided that this is the way to get rid. Once she stepped into the hospital, it was really as if her fate was decided, because they weren't going to let her out. Now, the hospital protocols have continued to be essentially murderous. The number of people that have been murdered, medically murdered, under Fauci's various protocols, one after the other, compared to Mengele, there's no comparison. Mengele, the monster that he was, it was a finite number that he could murder, because he dealt with each one, eyeball to eyeball. He actually did. He knew each of his victims. Fauci doesn't know them at all. He just gave the orders and that's it. He is responsible probably for millions. Totally preventable.
You are listening to Understanding the Times Radio. I'm Jan Markell. I have in studio Scott Shera. Learn more at ouramazinggrace.net. Scott, talk to me a little bit about what we've just heard, because there is the analogy that's going on between what happened some 80 years ago. Now we've got genocide going on again.
That is a hard clip for me to listen to, Jan. Yeah. What people don't understand is that this evil has become part of the culture of death in our society. I want to speak specifically about Down syndrome people, like Vera referenced. Down syndrome people right now are murdered at the rate of 70% in the United States before they're born.
Right.
When Grace came into this world, the doctors asked Cindy and I if we wanted to keep her. That is such a strange thing to ask. Well, of course we want to keep her. Outside of salvation, she was the best gift God ever gave us. She changed our whole life. So to have her taken out because she has Down syndrome is so strange to me. But we found the smoking gun. I want to read from that document, Jan, because it's so critical that people understand. I referenced Obamacare, which was passed on March 23rd of 2010. So then you must ask, how do they do this? How do they pull it off? Well, they have training documents. So we found this document. It's from the Palliative Care Network of Wisconsin. It's titled Palliative Care for Patients with Down Syndrome. It's written by two MDs. This was written in July of 2011.
Hmm.
So this is a training document written to implement Obamacare. This document goes through three parts. The first part, it lists all the problems that Down syndrome people have. No benefits, no blessings. It's just all problems. So there's about 50 of them. Hmm. They list dental issues, septal defects, thyroid dysfunction, osteoporosis. It goes on and on and on. So what's the reason they just list all these problems? The reason is because they want to set up this idea that the families don't want this person with all these problems in their life. So they make a transition statement in this document. It says specifically the lifelong toll on families is high. This is training physicians. They're telling these physicians that the people don't want these Down syndrome people. Part of a robust plan of care includes acknowledgement of this toll by healthcare providers. So they do that to set up the killing statement. So here's the killing statement. It says, whenever possible, decision makers, that's the doctors, for people with Down syndrome should be encouraged to use substituted judgment to make key palliative care decisions. All efforts should be made to determine the preferences of the patient. However, because of lifelong cognitive impairment, the views of the person with Down syndrome may not be known. Just process that. Yeah. I know the view of every person with Down syndrome. They want to live.
Right.
But this is the training they receive. So it's no wonder that when they looked at Grace and they referenced that Grace had Down syndrome 36 different times in the 22 doctor's reports. What's the purpose of that? The standard of care didn't change because she had Down syndrome, but the implementation of Obamacare changed because they're trained to take out people with Down syndrome.
Scott, how can my listeners protect themselves and those they love from something like this happening to them?
That's a fantastic question. I have multiple answers.
And take your time, please.
I want to get to the specific, but I want to start out with the generalities first. And so the single most important thing that I learned from this whole pandemic is to not let fear control you. My personal fear led me to take Grace to the hospital. So the propaganda had influenced my psyche. And we can't get fooled again. I had to repent of that situation because God did not give us a spirit of fear. Whatever they have next, whether it's a pandemic, you had Pastor Brandon on last week and he talked about the UFO opportunity. I mean, there's who knows what they're going to do. It's going to be worldwide, but we're going to be influenced by fear unless we're grounded and realize that spirit of fear is from Satan. So I want to start with that. The second thing I would say is that the single most important thing that anybody can do if you're wanting to pay attention as to how you can protect yourself is you've got to change your belief. If you believe the story that I'm telling you about Grace's death and these 1.2 million Americans' deaths in hospitals, then you will do something. If you think hospitals are still safe zones, you will do nothing. Assuming you are now nudged to change your belief, and that's really what you want to talk about, what can people do? The first thing that they can do is they can be prepared for a hospital stay. Obviously, you want to stay out of the hospital, but inevitably, we're going to get to a hospital. Right. So you need to be prepared for a hospital stay. Cindy, my wife, and I rescued Robert Pazer out of a Green Bay hospital. Yeah. That's how I learned what I'm going to tell you now. So I learned it firsthand. And if I would have known what I'm going to tell you now, when Grace was in the hospital, she'd be alive today, in spite of us taking her to the hospital. The preparation that is specifically necessary is there's a set of documents that are called advanced directives. What we want to have everybody do, we have these forms. Greta Crawford and Laura Bartlett put together this set of forms, the power of attorney forms, the medical directives forms. They're linked on Grace's website under the Hospital Rescue tab.
Yes, Hospital Rescue tab, folks. That's ouramazinggrace.net.
There's never been a document that can save your life, but it's a starting point. So what you're doing is start from the perspective that the hospital is a place for you to go to get help. It's not a place to turn over responsibility for your health to the doctor. You're responsible for your own health. So just start from the check-in process. Before check-in, you should have your medical directives form completed, your power of attorney completed, so you're prepared. Those should be on file with the hospital that you would end up going to. So they're part of your patient chart. Regardless of if you have that done ahead of time or not, you should have them with you. So when you check into the hospital, don't just sign the little screen that they give you with the fake pen. See what you're signing. Have the printout there. Cross off and initial the things that you disagree with. Now you're in the hospital. When you go through the medical directives form with the doctor, you have to make sure that the doctor understands that you are in charge of your own health care. And then the single most important thing you can understand is you have a right to informed consent. Informed consent is two words. The doctors have a responsibility under their own medical code of ethics. I'm going to read from the American Medical Association Code of Medical Ethics. Opinion 2.1.1, it says, informed consent to medical treatment is fundamental in both ethics and law. Patients have the right to receive information and ask questions about recommended treatments so that they can make well-considered decisions about healthcare. This is what the doctors already subscribed to. They don't make this public to you. If I would have known my right to informed consent as Grace's step-in power of attorney, Grace would be alive today. Mm-hmm. Think through what this means. It's two words, informed and consent. If you are going to go buy a brand new car and you don't know anything about it, you get informed. You spend some time, you look on the internet, you ask the salesperson, you ask multiple people. So this is your responsibility with the doctor. Anything that the doctor suggests, take it as a suggestion, and you ask all the questions you need to get your arms around whether you want to proceed with his recommendation or not. So now you're informed. Have somebody from the outside who you trust, once you've got all that information and have done your research, to find out, does this make sense? Here's what I'm thinking. Get a second opinion. Then, as a separate event, give your consent. Don't feel the pressure. They want to pressure you to make a decision live. Take your time to discern what you've learned, pray about it, and then give your consent separate. The only time that doesn't apply is in an objective emergency. And I do want to say, I learned with the rescue of Robert Pazer, I said that no document can save your life. So we had, through both Laura and Greta, helped me get prepared for that rescue. So we had the medical directives document. We went through it. So Robert agreed with everything. His power of attorney was there. We went through the document with the doctor. One of the things in the document that we had was no vaccines, no jabs. Of course, we had no DNR. The things that you would expect to be in that document, it's pre-populated in the documents on Grace's website. But even after we did that, the nurse came in with the COVID flu jab to give to Robert. We had already gone through the directive. So you've got to advocate. A hospital setting is not the time to play nice. It is the time to be firm. And if you cannot advocate for yourself, you need to have somebody that can advocate. And they've got to have the perspective that they are there to protect you and save your life. They're not there to play nice with the doctor. You're hiring the doctor for a service. If that doctor does not provide the service that you request, fire the doctor. That is your responsibility. It is time to realize that I am here for a service and I need to protect my life. I am in charge of my own health care.
I'm winding down on time, but I want to remind folks that your banner verse is Genesis 50:20, that what Satan means for evil, God's going to use for good. How has that played out?
There's been so many people who have reached out to us. Obviously, you know about Robert Pazer because he's in the film. About a month ago, a man in Appleton sent me an email. He said, Scott, because of the billboards you have up and you speaking out, he said, my son was at the same hospital and they wouldn't let my wife and I in the room. He's disabled. They were going to put him on remdesivir. And I remembered what you said. So we rushed down to the hospital and we removed him and he's alive today because of Grace's death. We know it's making a difference. It's a different animal than what I'm used to with making a difference, but we are making a difference. I am so thankful that we're being used to do something that is truly a blessing to other people.
You've virtually given up your business to be able to advocate as you are here. You've had other heartache in your life. I think you lost a son. Was it to suicide?
Yes, in 2018, Travis took his life.
Yeah, and you've got your daughter, Jessica, who was very involved in all of this with Grace. She was one of the biggest advocates for Grace. Anything else you want to say? I've down to about 3 minutes. If so, it's all yours.
Jan, thanks for that opportunity to close on something that I think is maybe the most important thing, and that is I don't think people realize what's really happening. We are truly in the boiling frog pot right now. Grace's death woke me up, and now I've jumped out. I can see it. I am doing this, and our family is doing this, because we don't want anybody else to have to go through that. Anybody that is awake, we have a responsibility to likely do more than what we're doing. I was a lazy Christian before all of this, and now I see my responsibility under the parable of the talents differently. And I'm going to read James 4:17. If anyone then knows the good they ought to do and doesn't do it, it is sin for them. And that's a call to action for anybody who is awake to what is going on. You have that responsibility. As Vera says, if we just say no, we can stop this. I've been asked many times, is this a hill to die on? And the answer is yes. The masks were a hill to die on. The jab is the hill to die on. These are all hills to die on. Why? Because they're evil. The slippery slope is alive and well. We are in the boiling frog pot. And if we don't do our part, we are going to boil to death.
I strongly encourage you to check out the film. Most convenient way is rumble.com. And the film, again, is Breaking the Oath, The Evils of Incentivized Healthcare. Scott, thank you for driving in today from Appleton. Your story is so compelling. We're going to keep giving some updates. We'll do it again probably in the fall. Folks, I'm just going to go out emphasizing a Bible verse, and that's Deuteronomy 30:19. And there we read, I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life. Every one of you is a unique person called for such a time as this. You are all here on assignment. You are not here by accident. In the meantime, we are called to be salt and light in a dark and decaying world. So I'm just going to encourage you to go out into the world and shine that light today. I want to thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Contact us through our website, olivetreeviews.org. That's olivetreeviews.org. Call us Central Time at 763-559-4444. That's 763-559-4444. We get our mail when you write to Olive Tree Ministries and Jan Markell, Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. That's Box 1452, Maple Grove, Minnesota, 55311. All gifts are tax deductible. In troubled times, we must say with the psalmist, I trust in you, O Lord. Our times are in your hands. Nothing happens by accident. It is all orchestrated so that everything can fall into place.